Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of The Waggle Podcast, which, like every edition, is brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, who are known for the Sport Clips MVP haircut experience, which includes shampoos massaged into your scalp, hot steam towels for your face, and sports on TV. Sports like, for example, hockey, baseball, basketball, and of course, football, the best sport. It is good to be a guy. It is good to be a Sport Clips guy. And it's really good to know this guy that is coming up on the podcast. Guy who, if not for him, I wouldn't be on this podcast. I wouldn't be in this industry. God knows where I would be. That guy is someone you know as a football fan, Dwayne Ford, an authoritative voice in our country when it comes to football at all levels, amateur, intercollegiate, and certainly professional. But my professional relationship dates back to when I first got into the industry, and it was because of him. And that's the nature of our conversation. As we celebrate Black Stories for Black History Month, we're going to celebrate and extrapolate the story of how there's some Black legacy with Dwayne and with other football commentators and analysts and reporters that have come after him. That and more up next on The Waggle. So once again, thank you to Dwayne Ford for joining The Waggle, who once again bails us out, which is much appreciated. And it is Black History Month, and this will be a Black History Month edition of the show. We only have 28 days in February, so we're going to use them wisely. But before we get to that, since we have you, I want to get maybe your takeaways and appraisal on the start of free agency, which, like anything in 2020/2021, is a bit different this year. We know that there are some teams that are just looking to get to the salary cap floor. There's some teams who have pronounced they're not going to give out bonuses, only to then, in a competitive space, start to give out some bonuses. And there's some teams who did their work early and thus aren't maybe making as big a splash in free agency this year. What, if anything, has really so far stuck out to you about the movement of players this offseason?
Well, the number one thing for me, I would say, and this is probably an annual statement from me, especially in recent years, is that there's probably more movement of players than I would like to see, and too many one-year contracts, quite frankly, that, you know, that's something that I would like to see evolve in the Canadian Football League. And I suspect that fans would like to see it evolve as well, that when you have a favorite player, to kind of anticipate that favorite player is likely to be with your team for a longer period, as opposed to being as transient as things are now. But, you know, the other thing that has caught my attention has been, you know, locally for those in Southern Ontario, I guess the creativity, aggressiveness, whatever you want to call it, of Pinball Clemens, and maybe more accurately, John Murphy and the Toronto Argonauts, in terms of going out and attempting to bolster their roster and bolster it with a lot of guys with whom John Murphy has some history from previous stops in the league in Calgary and Saskatchewan.
Yeah, so on you know, the statement of what seems like everyone getting one-year deals all the time now, it's actually... I don't even really look for the terms anymore, because I just assume every deal is a one-year deal at this point. It's funny, right? So we've got this phenomenon in the National Football League where, you know, players are generally looking for, you know, some longer-term commitments, right? They want some tenure. In the NBA, it's the opposite. Players are fighting for their contracts to be a bit shorter, and the teams prefer a little bit longer of a commitment. The CFL is maybe, you know, uniquely positioned in a league where it seems both the club and the player both are very comfortable with the deals being very short. How did we get to that point?
Well, I think part of it certainly has to do with the state of the CBA and ongoing negotiations that I think, because this has been a situation, particularly with the pandemic going on, that has caused it to take a little bit longer for the next agreement to be reached is, I guess nobody wants to get locked into anything that's going to impact them if the situation changes in the next collective bargaining agreement. And so everybody is kind of in this let's wait and see mode in terms of their contract status. And it's resulted in this quirky situation with no football being played in the Canadian Football League in 2020. You've got players who have changed teams twice since they last played a game. And it's, the only news is player transactions rather than players playing. So we look forward to getting these guys on the field in 2021 and rectifying that.
Before we get to the Black History Month conversation, I want to, follow up on your other takeaway on the creative, constant movement that is what the roster of the Toronto Argonauts looks like. And I got the impression when this management team was put in place, they were going to build slowly for sustained success, really invest in young players and Canadians and not try to go 0-60. And then, the pandemic happens and this offseason occurs and they've been really aggressive and they've really targeted some players who are veterans who are a little bit, on the second end of their careers, but have put together a lot of production. And it's, somewhat of a change in philosophy from what I've seen from the outside looking in, which gives me two thoughts. One is similarly to what I thought the Blue Jays should do and have since done is, given the fact that we're in a market where a lot of clubs, ownership groups aren't certain how much money they're going to make and are being really, really careful with their spending, a team with some financial support like the Blue Jays and Rogers or like the Argos and MLSE could really use that as an intrinsic advantage with the financial uncertainty, not just now, but moving forward, and really spend and make up the difference really quickly. We saw the Jays do it, and looks like maybe that's what the Argos are doing. The other thought that I had was people get really excited and want to win the press conference, and you see all of these names that you recognize signed to your team. That doesn't necessarily mean all of them are going to make the opening day roster as you become cap compliant. And as I look at this team and see, okay, well, they're not working to the cap floor like some teams, but even still, is there a way to fit all of these players and all of this money in when it comes time to kick off some football? And so should we be expecting some camp cuts of some veterans, whether they're guys who have been on the team before or recent signings? How do you see this all shaking out for them, both as a short-term and long-term strategy?
Yeah, I think that you may see some surprising names cut as the season approaches. They've certainly created a situation where we can anticipate some competition in training camp, and quite frankly, maybe even some competition for playing time during the season. You never know exactly what drives a player in terms of his selection of team and free agency, that sometimes there can be considerations more than money. I look at a guy like Charleston Hughes, for example, who's played his entire career in the West, a Michigan guy, played his college football in Michigan, and maybe an opportunity to be in the East and be a little bit closer to home may contribute to taking slightly less money to play at this stage of his career. I don't know exactly, the terms of his contract or some of the other veterans that you've seen, Eric Rogers, Cordero Law, Odell Willis, to name a few. But, there again, this is where I think it takes some creativity and sometimes simply selling guys on a vision of what it is you're trying to do. I think that when you look at the Argos, I do think that the market is a consideration, and having not played football for a year, I do think that there's probably a bit of a desire to be, as you said, a little bit more aggressive and make a splash and ensure that they're competitive right away when they do come back. The combination of Nick Arbuckle reuniting with Ryan Dinwiddie, I'm sure is intriguing to many in terms of what that may mean for the Argonaut offense, and some interesting faces, a couple of former NFL veterans potentially joining that receiving core as well, along with Eric Rogers. So, I think all of those things are considerations in terms of why the team has elected to be so aggressive in 2021 as opposed to maybe a slightly different plan when they were looking towards playing in 2020.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how many of those names are on the roster, what that roster looks like, and ultimately, if that commitment isn't just a short-term one, but if they're willing to continue to reinvest in the club. And really, you know, from my standpoint, reinvest not just on the field and that product, but everything around the football club. So that will be a story worth watching. We have you on, you know, this month, and it was, you know, the idea of the group at the CFL to have some conversations. We talk about them all the time, and they become somewhat traditional when it comes to, you know, Black History Month and CFL. We talk about, you know, breaking the color barrier and some of the great exploits of the players. But one of the pieces of conversation that we don't necessarily talk about is broadcasting and what importance it holds to have some representation in broadcasting. For me personally, that representation has been you. And, you know, I've probably told this story upwards of 100,000 times, because as you know, many people ask you in your broadcasting, how did you get into broadcasting? And for me, it was myself basically stalking you as a university athlete, and saying in no uncertain terms, I endeavor to continue my life close to the game of football. There isn't an abundance at the time for Canadian 170-pound running backs at the CFL level. So I would like to continue to cover the sport. You are covering it after playing, and hopefully you have some sort of an affinity with me as a former Western guy and as a Toronto guy and as a running back, and maybe in some small part as a you know, someone following your footsteps as a Black guy. I will stalk you unless you get me an internship on the CFL Snap, your show at The Score at the time. An internship which I had tried to get for two previous years, going the traditional routes and to no avail. But D Ford sends a couple emails, and next thing you know, I'm an intern. And shortly after that, I'm helping out on the University Rush broadcast, and I'm hired. And, you know, that career literally that I have now doesn't happen without you advocating for me and sponsoring me in a way. And so I'm like a small leaf on your broadcasting tree. What is your origin story, transforming yourself from your identity as a player to a broadcaster? And what was that assimilation like for you when you went through it?
Yeah, it's, you know, I start by saying, you know, my agent's fee, I'm going to send you an invoice now for my, my 5% of all future earnings. But, no, you have, I am very proud of, you know, any role that I may have played in your career. But, you know, I think that the success that you've had and will continue to have is, that's all you, kid. But, you know, in terms of my own start in the business, I guess it speaks to what my feelings are about one aspect anyway of the nature of the industry, which is that I find it to be something of a pay it forward world. And so for me, as I was late in my career, 2001, my 11th year in the league, was my first year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats after spending the previous 5 years in Calgary. And we ended up losing in the East Final that year to Milt Stegall and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And Grey Cup was in Montreal, and my former team, the Calgary Stampeders, were in it. So a bunch of my buddies were going to be playing. And I actually got together with a bunch of guys that I had played football with at Western. And we decided, you know, I mean, any excuse for a weekend in Montreal at that stage of our lives. And so we decided to head to Montreal for a few days and to go to the game. And it was actually after the game, we were out in a bar on Crescent Street, and several members of the media were there. And among them was Elliot Friedman. And Elliot had been a sports reporter at Western. I forget whether he was with the school radio station or the school paper at the time, but was very involved in covering school sports at Western when myself and the group of guys that I was with played there. So he knew all of us very well. Elliot was the senior reporter at The Score. at the time. And we got into a conversation about the game. And as we kind of concluded this conversation, he said to me, you know, we could use a CFL analyst at the Score. If you're not playing next year, or if you guys aren't in the playoffs, you should come and be our playoff analyst. Well, as fate would have it, I did play one more year in Hamilton. And sure enough, we ended up missing the playoffs that year. And so looking to make up for my lost playoff bonuses, I decided to put in a call to Elliot at the Score. And I ended up going in and being their playoff analyst that year for the 3 weeks of playoffs, and basically doing some pregame hits and some postgame analysis and so on, and reprised that role again the next year, which was my first year of retirement, 2003. And from there, it grew into a bigger job at the network that included being a suite reporter. So I voiced over highlights of all sports, did segments called Score on the CFL, where I provided some analysis, and became the game analyst on the University Rush broadcasts that you mentioned earlier. And eventually the next year we added the show CFL Snap. So, I had someone with whom I shared some history that I guess provided me an opportunity to get into the business, and that opportunity grew and put me in a position to do the same for others. And I, as I said, have been more than happy to do that.
The part that jumps out at me in that story is that you were a suite reporter, which for, the uninitiated who don't really know, is an entry-level job in the business in terms of wanting to be an on-air personality. It's something that, Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sixero and Adnan Virk all did at some point, but it's not necessarily something you expect someone who has won multiple Grey Cups to be voicing, Australian Open highlights or curling highlights, whatever it was they had you voicing, like, luge recaps or whatever it was. Why were at that point of your life, were you willing to do that?
It was an interesting time, actually, because for me, I, at the time that I was working at the Score, when they approached me with the job opportunity, I was actually also in teacher's college. And so my plan when I finished high school, I had hopes of playing in the Canadian Football League, but my plan all along growing up was that I was going to be a high school teacher. And so I elected to wait until my career was done to go to teacher's college. And so I was kind of combining these two things part-time, going to school, and this opportunity was here. I really didn't know even if where the broadcasting was going to go. It was a post-football career opportunity. It was something that was kind of fun. People obviously, because of what my careers have been, I suppose, over the last 25 years, people assume that I'm very, very much a football guy, which, obviously to some extent I am, but I'm a huge sports guy. And, I am a fan of many different things. I grew up in a family that not only had Toronto Argonauts season tickets, but also continues to be Toronto Maple Leaf season ticket holders. And as you know, I coach high school football, coach a couple of minor hockey teams, I always say I was probably a better basketball player than football player in high school, and sort of on and on, so many different sports. And so the suite reporter thing was kind of fun for me because it was sports, quite frankly. Like, literally, I think for a lot of people it would be a dream job to describe it. You're sitting there with a few different TVs on around you, basically watching multiple games, potentially in multiple sports at the same time, and picking out the highlights that you want to put in your pack once the game is over. So, for me, it was just a great fit, a fun job. And as you know, the camaraderie that existed at that station between people, no matter what their jobs were, made it a terrific place to work at that time.
Well, we went into the roles certainly differently and our roles at the Score differently, but it was certainly the closest thing to a locker room that, you know, I've experienced in the business. And so it was maybe a little bit easier of a transition when your identity goes from being a player as part of a team, you know, going into the score at that time and place to being, you know, a different player and having a different role, but being a part of a different team. And so I think probably, you know, both positively and negatively, it was the closest thing to a locker room in the business that that I've experienced. What was your interaction like with the media as a player, specifically in terms of seeing any sort of representation in the media that was covering you throughout your career? Was there any, or was there at all a shift in terms of the types of faces that you saw in a scrum or at a press conference?
I don't know if I would say that I necessarily saw a big shift over over the course of my career, but, you know, certainly I actually did see a degree of diversity. When I look at the bureau reporters that were in Calgary during my time there, I mean, there were female reporters. Lisa Bowes was there at one point. Obviously my wife, Sherry Ford, was there at one point as the Calgary bureau reporter. David Amber was there as the Calgary bureau reporter. So, you know, even just sort of locally in the place that I played most of my career, you know, interestingly, for what a lot of the discussion is about a lack of different faces, a lack of diversity, you know, yeah, obviously there were more white male faces than anything else. But even going back to that time, you know, mid to late 90s, you know, there actually was a degree of diversity.
And now we're seeing in terms of front facing on air, you know, commentating and analysis around the game, certainly at TSN, much more diversity. There's been other names in and around the same time as you that, you know, have provided some diversity. Kahari Jones had a stint, Dave Benefield, certainly, obviously Jock Climie, but now with yourself and Milt and Davis as players, and obviously Farhan covering the sport for a long time. You know, it was jarring for me, I want to say a couple years ago, and I remember tweeting about it, to look up at the TSN panel and to see all of the analysts being black guys. Something that I never would have thought I saw, certainly didn't see as a kid, but it wasn't referenced, it wasn't mentioned, other than me referencing and mentioning it on social media and applauding the group. But it was a stark difference. And I thought to myself, well, I mean, I'm used to all of the players being black, or a good portion of them. This shouldn't feel different. Now that you've seen, you know, some guys come and follow your footsteps, not just turning their broadcast careers into an opportunity, but doing it after playing the game, what's that like to have some teammates along your side at TSN?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something that that I'm proud of. You know, to see basically a philosophy, particularly as it pertains to our CFL coverage, or our coverage of live events, going further, when you look at panels for other sports as well, where you've seen, you know, the likes of Sam Mitchell and Kia Nurse, for example, involved in basketball. You know, I give a lot of credit to my direct boss, Paul Graham, who I believe is a guy who simply does things the way that I think they should be done, which is, quite frankly, don't hire people based on color, is simply hire the best, most qualified person for the job, regardless of that. And, you know, I think ultimately, if you do that, what you start to see is more of a representation of society as a whole, something that mirrors society a little bit more accurately is, you know, I think you get a reflection of, as I said, not just your audience, but of society.
If we're talking about football and Canadian football specifically, is there an area that jumps out at you where we could use some real improvement and intentionality at this standpoint? Sadly, you know, just hiring the person that's best for the job, I don't think has happened in many areas in football. Why there's a lack of representation in some roles other than the ones on the field. Obviously there's the Rooney rule in the NFL, which, you know, hasn't necessarily produced the desired result. If we were to examine our game in Canada, where do you see there's room for growth around diversity and inclusion?
You know, the first thing to me is that I think there needs to be, whether we're talking about football, whether we're talking about broadcasting, or quite frankly, any other industry, I think that we need to get to a point where it's not just, it has to be about wanting things to be better and wanting things to be fair, as opposed to just wanting it to look like things are fair, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, performative, basically.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes that that people can be in leadership positions can be a little bit driven more by perception than by reality, by what the outside perception is of your business. And so this is where I think it becomes important that, I guess, programs to create equal opportunities and put people of color, people of any marginalized group, quite frankly, because I think sometimes this gets very hung up on race when it can be about gender, sexual preference, anything else. And, you know, so I think you need to ensure that there are opportunities for people from all groups, but particularly from these marginalized groups, to be on equal footing in terms of getting to leadership positions as well. You know, I think it's sort of very easy to look, you know, just going back to the broadcasting industry as an example, and say, yeah, suddenly there are more visible minorities appearing on camera, whether it's sports broadcasting, whether it's television shows, whether it's television commercials. You know, that for me is quite honestly kind of window dressing. That's perception, right? Like, to people watching from the outside, that creates a belief that, yeah, things are better. But until sort of equality exists in terms of leadership positions in broadcasting, in football, in literally any industry, you know, that we will not have sort of accomplished in reality what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it's a good point that there should be as much focus and really scrutiny on what the executive suites look like as there is to what the broadcast booths look like.
Yeah, I mean, the analogy that I would give, quite honestly, is that it's, you know, it's if you imagine a house that is run down, decrepit, and its foundations are crumbling, you know, from the outside, nobody can see what that foundation looks like. But from the outside, you know, you can make the house look better by giving it a paint job, you know, throwing on new shingles, maybe, you know, some new window coverings, whatever it may be. But if you don't fix the foundation, you will eventually repeat the exact same problems. And so I think it's very important, kind of at this time, while this is all front of mind, to ensure that the structure is being fixed, and that the time is taken for people to understand what the issues are. I don't want to see changes that are made because, you know, those in leadership positions are, you know, are kind of afraid of anger or afraid of a movement that's going on and what that's going to mean for them from a PR point of view. I want changes to be made because people actually understand that there is an issue and exactly what that issue is. And that's going to take time and patience and education for and from everybody on all sides of this.
What I'm hearing is that we need Dwayne Ford as a broadcast executive. That's what I'm hearing. Now, I think sadly we're going to lose Dwayne Ford and he's going to become a football executive. But I think you'd have great impact either way. You've had certainly great impact on me and, you know, my career. It certainly doesn't happen, or doesn't happen in the same way, if not for you. But I think, to be honest, as a consumer of the sport, unconsciously in many ways, you've had a great impact in breaking down the X's and O's at such a high level of the game, of the draft, of the league, and having that acumen come from a black man is
is important, right? That you can show that, no, I don't just use my physical brute strength and lead on power runs, get the ball at the goal line. Also, inside this helmet is an individual with great expertise, acumen, and some smart thoughts. So thank you for sharing those smart thoughts on this podcast, and continue to do what you're doing, even though you're at times you're not doing it for that reason.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and as I said, I am proud of all that you've accomplished, and happy to take credit for whatever small role I've played in it. But you've done all the heavy lifting, my friend.
Well, if I owe you 5%, it sounds like there's compounding interest on what I owe Elliot Friedman, another Western guy. So I thank you both.
My pleasure.
So thanks again to Dwayne Ford, who's been such a huge supporter of me and a huge supporter of growth of football in our country and of it moving forward, and it moving forward in a way that is inclusive and diverse. Speaking of which, on this very podcast, we endeavor to be a part of that conversation as well. So next week, we're going to continue the Black History Month conversation for the last week of February as we bring some other Black voices that have really been influential in the game of football, both as players, but now as broadcasters. So look for that in this space next week. In between time, in the meantime, feel free to like, share, favorite, and subscribe to this podcast, and let us know who you want to hear from and what you want to hear about, because this, as always, is a service for you. Thank you so much for listening.
The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.